we want to dig right into results from yesterday's elections. We know Kentucky will have a Republican governor after Tea Party favorite Matt Bevin beat his Democratic opponent by almost 9 percentage points.
And we also know the results of a lot of interesting ballot questions from around the country. We're going to check in now on three of them in Texas, Ohio, and California. In Houston, voters defeated an anti-discrimination ordinance that became known as the bathroom ordinance because critics campaigning against it claimed that it would have allowed men who identify as women to use women's bathrooms. Joining us now is Craig Cohen, host of Houston Matters on Houston Public Media. And Craig, let's first remind people what this ordinance would have covered.
All right. Well, so Jeremy, it would have provided a local remedy to bring claims of discrimination to the city for 15 protected classes, including gay and transgender Houstonians. Now, those last two classes aren't protected at the state level here in Texas, so Houston was attempting to follow the lead of the other major cities in Texas who offer such protections, and those last categories essentially became the focal point of opposition to the ordinance, as you suggested.
The opponents made this all about transgender people or even people who were claiming to be transgender using women's bathrooms.
Yeah. Recall the ad you shared on Monday's Here and Now, which characterized it as that bathroom ordinance. And that really was how the debate was framed. Opponents charged the ordinance would have given legal protection to, as one ad put it, troubled men who could use it to justify entering a woman's restroom to do harm. Proponents of the ordinance, of course, rejected that assertion. There was no language in the ordinance itself that would suggest it, but they were less effective in countering it. It's notable also that this was an off-year election, and while voter turnout was higher because of Prop 1 than in other similar non-gubernatorial or presidential elections, this was decided by only about 12% of the population of the city of Houston. I spoke with one political scientist who suggested that had this vote taken place next November, with turnout almost certainly higher, the result could have been quite different.
And this was obviously a disappointing result for Houston's outgoing openly lesbian mayor, Anise Parker.
Indeed. She's the only openly gay mayor of a major city, elected three times. And something like this sort of, from her perspective, potentially could tarnish the image of the city of Houston. So that's one of the things she's expressed concerns about.
She and a lot of big companies that operate in Texas.
Yeah, some companies or events might be potentially less likely to come here without the ordinance in place. That's what some have expressed. Others, though, including Bill King, who is challenging Sylvester Turner in the mayoral runoff here next month, dispute that and say we got by without the ordinance before, that it's not really necessary, nothing's really changed.
Was this a surprise, Craig?
Well, I guess it depends on who you ask. It all comes down to voter turnout in local, non-presidential elections. They do tend to favor more conservative voters or those that are more passionate or emotional about an issue. And the opposition to this ordinance seemed to be more angry than supporters were excited.
Craig Cohen, host of Houston Matters on Houston Public Media. Thank you, Craig.
You're welcome.
Let's go now to Ohio, where voters rejected an initiative that would have legalized marijuana but restricted the commercial growing of it to some of the wealthy donors who were behind the initiative and might have benefited. Joe Ingles is news reporter at Ohio Public Radio and TV. Joe, the headlines have been that Ohio voters rejected marijuana, but is it that or did they reject this monopoly?
Well, it's kind of both. This issue three, would have allowed for 10 specific growing sites and named investors in those. And those sites would have had the exclusive ability to provide pot for the first 4 years, but more sites could have been added after that.
And the word monopoly was actually in the ballot question.
Right. It was the title of it that was put there by the ballot board. And the people who were invested in this were some, you know, high names people like Oscar Robinson, basketball star, Nick Lachey, an entertainer. And these people that have these sites would have been able to get the money out of that monopoly and you know, a lot of money, actually $1 billion a year. But the backers of the proposal said, hey, wait, we've got 1,100 retail stores. There's a home grow provision so that anyone 21 and older could grow pot on their own. So it was most certainly, in their eyes, not a monopoly, but the ballot board deemed it was. So in the end, that's the reason it was treated as such.
Well, this is such an odd case. You know, what happened to the second question that was in Ohio that was against the first that you just described?
Well, and that's it. Marijuana is not legal in Ohio. Polls show there's a strong support for medical marijuana, so it kind of makes it attractive to investors. But Ohioans made that change in taking that other provision that you talked about, not the one whether marijuana could be legalized, but there was this anti-monopoly amendment that was put on the ballot by Ohio lawmakers. And that gives the state's ballot board more control to over future proposed amendments brought by citizens. And here's how it happened. When lawmakers saw this marijuana issue was going to be on the ballot, the legislature passed this anti-monopoly plan and put it before voters, too. And the proposal gives the ballot board, which is controlled by state political leaders, right now that's Republican, it gives it the authority to scrutinize every future constitutional amendment proposed by citizens to see whether a monopoly is involved. And that board gets to decide what constitutes a monopoly. Opponents of this issue pointed out it gave more power to state to the state politicians, took it away from Ohioans, and some union leaders even expressed concern that the new change could make it harder for citizens to protect their collective bargaining rights.
Well, this is such an odd thing. It's very fascinating. But you just said that polls show that people in Ohio are largely for medical marijuana. So do you see that going back on the ballot and not driven by the investors who are on the monopoly issue?
Well, that's a good question. We will probably see something done. The Speaker of the Ohio House wants the federal government to change marijuana so it's no longer a Schedule I drug. And he's also talking about the legislature starting a pilot program that could lead up to medical marijuana soon. But it might be small, and who knows when it will start. And a citizen group that's out there that's already been trying to put a medical marijuana ballot before voters next year is saying that this whole Issue 2 thing that passed, that anti-monopoly amendment, might make it harder to put that issue on the ballot.
That's quite something. Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio and TV, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, in San Francisco, voters decided against redistricting or restricting the popular housing rental site Airbnb. Let's check in on that with KQED's Guy Marzorati, who is with us from San Francisco. And Guy, remind us what this measure would have done. And of course, in the context of the fact that San Francisco is one of the most expensive cities in the country to live in.
Yeah, well, there's three main things that Prop F would have done to tighten restrictions on these Airbnb-type rentals. First is to put a straight 75-night cap per year on all short-term rentals. Currently, it's a 90-day cap if you're renting out an entire unit, and San Francisco has no limit if you're just renting out a spare bedroom. Secondly, it would have made Airbnb share data with the city on short-term rentals. The company has balked at that proposition, and it would allow the city to sue Airbnb for posting illegal rentals. And third, and perhaps this was the most controversial part of the measure, it would have allowed residents to sue law-breaking hosts and collect financial damages from them in court that went above and beyond just the cost of showing up in court.
So now there will not be a cap more than the 90-day cap if you're renting out your apartment on Airbnb, or I guess less than that in terms of a number of nights. How unusual are regulations like this on Airbnb?
Well, Jeremy, you know, even though this measure failed in San Francisco, the city still has perhaps the most complex regulatory framework around these type of rentals of anywhere in the region and even in the state of California. It has its own Office of Short-Term Rentals, although that's struggled to crack down on some law-breaking hosts. Other big cities, Los Angeles, San Diego, they haven't gotten this far along in regulations. They're still kind of in the exploratory or early phase of moving forward with legislation.
What are the opponents going to do now? I imagine there are a lot of unhappy people in San Francisco. Certainly, we were there last week and talked to a lot of people who were very much in favor of restrictions on people renting out their apartments on Airbnb. What are they going to do now?
Yeah, well, I think in San Francisco, I wouldn't be surprised if opponents of the law on the Board of Supervisors try to make revisions to the law next year. For Airbnb, they're going to keep operating as usual and kind of work with cities to, you know, hash out tax agreements so at least they can remit local hotel taxes, give revenue to cities. But, you know, politically, I think life is probably going to get harder for opponents of short-term rentals. Airbnb showed in this campaign their willingness to spend millions to fight measures they don't like. And talking to folks from Airbnb, they've told me that if there's anything they've learned from this process in SF, is that they can use the same hosts who are the foundation of their business model to be the foot soldiers in future political battles. You know, they had a significant financial advantage in the campaign, but they also used these hosts to get out the vote and pretty much match the on-the-ground presence for proponents of Prop F.
Was this a surprise, Guy? Because there was certainly a lot of criticism of Airbnb because of these billboard advertisements that they put out there that people saw as really in poor taste. They were saying, you're welcome, San Francisco, for the tax money that we're giving you.
Yeah, I mean, those billboards, I think, certainly did not help the No on F campaign, but the $8 million that Airbnb spent definitely did help, and I think it was too much for the Prop F folks to overcome in the end. I think this is something that folks want restrictions on, but many people felt that the restrictions in Prop F were just too much, especially when it came to the possible litigation that could come from that private right of action.
KQED's Guy Marzorati joining us from San Francisco, where they also reelected Mayor Ed Lee. Guy, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.